Welcome to the Mike and Doug Show. This is Doug. Hi, Mike.
Hi, Doug. How are you?
Well, today, let's beat up on the British Knights of Malta, because what we found is that those the British are very good at mimicking the real Knights of Malta, the Sovereign Military Order of the Knights of Malta, which were the original Hospitallers, who basically had the Templars merged into them on the island of Malta. And those original Knights of Malta are a sovereign nation recognized by 110 other nations. And outside of the Vatican walls, they have a little area that is sovereign, and they get to do whatever they want. And when the British monarchy heard of this, I think they were jealous when they created their own version. And you have looked into this in great depth. So tell us a little bit about the British Order of the Knights of Malta.
Yeah, the British Order of the Knights of Malta had a slow beginning during the early 1800s, and they kept trying to refine how they were going to do it. And it became official in 1888 when the Queen ordered, by monarchical crown order, the creation of the English Priory of the Knights of Malta. And the reason the English were involved is the English were the, they had colonized Malta much earlier when the Maltese asked for protection of the British from the French, from Napoleon. And so during most of the 1800s, there was different discussions about how the order, it's called the Order of St. John, we'll just call it the Knights of Malta, how the British government was going to interact with that, because that Knights of Malta was under the Pope, and yet Britain was occupying Malta. So they went back and forth about how to do that, and various peoples organized different chapters in various parts of the world, but it wasn't official until 1888. And in 1888, the first thing that happened is the Prince of Wales, Albert Edward, was made the prior of the English Priory of the Knights of Malta. And then the Queen immediately was made the sovereign over the Knights of Malta. And so there we had a unique circumstance for the Knights, in that they had a Protestant monarch overseeing them, and they had a whole different set of rules. And one of the huge rule changes is that, in addition, you didn't even have to be a Christian to be a member, and they allowed women in, and it became a, on the surface, it was a healthcare related exercise, but it became the largest issuer of honors to this day in the world. And that seems to have been the main reason that the British took over the Knights of Malta, not because they needed to have any special status in Malta, which is a small island, but rather that it gave the monarch an excuse to issue all sorts of honors, in other words, knights and dames and earls and different titles to people all over the planet, not just British people, not just British aristocrats. And so that now is coming to the fore, in that we're seeing that the monarchy over the 1900s began issuing these titles to many Americans. And in 1888, officially, the issuance of Knights of Malta titles was merged into the normal British honor system, and therefore it made no difference. And so the monarch was able to issue all of these secret titles. They didn't publicize them. They weren't published in the London Gazette, which is normally where you would find somebody who received an honor. This was a secret society of honors that gave knights and titles and dukes and earls and things like this to people all over the world in secret. And now we're seeing some of the names of the Americans have actually been made public and include people that we all know. And yet, up until, I mean, you kept hammering on the Knights of Malta ever since I met you. And I didn't quite follow the significance of it. And a lot of what I've heard is related to banking and the Vatican Bank and whether or not the Queen is under the Pope and things like this. And those are interesting subjects for sure. But it looks like the Knights of Malta honor system was the prize of 1888. Now, the other thing that we need to realize in 1888 is that paperwork that was pushed through Parliament included a number of Rothschilds, not just Lord N.M. Rothschild, but also Lord Rosebery, who later became, inherited the N.M. Rothschild banking fortune. Lord Rosebery, who later became Prime Minister, Henry de Worms, and I'm missing one. Lord Rosebery, Henry de Worms, Lord Rothschild, and at the same time,
Cecil Rhodes.
Yeah, and at the same time, they were setting up Cecil Rhodes for sending him to the Transvaal to take over South Africa. So what is emerging now is a picture. The facts are now telling us what was going on, and it looks like well before the Pilgrim Society was founded in 1902 by these same people, they had devised by the 1880s this idea that they were going to set up a new type of empire that would be run by corporations and bankers, and that it was their job to seize the wealth of the planet for this new empire. And then the other thing that's coming out in the research is that the Prince of Wales then, who later became King Edward VII, was quite involved with this whole development of the British South Africa Company, of the Knights of Malta. And he had actually been involved in the Knights of Malta probably 30 years earlier. So he's coming into the fore as a major player. And boy, that explains so much, Douglas, because as you know, one of the things that always bugged me about talking about what the British did in South Africa was how they had such boldness in what Cecil Rhodes did and Lord Rothschild did and Alfred Milner. Well, now it's obvious. They had the support of the monarchy for everything they did. So they could rape, pillage, plunder, steal, murder, whatever they wanted to do in South Africa. And that was their first experiment with this new type of corporation, where they decided that they had to seize whatever wealth they needed to achieve this objective. And as we know, one of the key objectives of their plan was to reincorporate the United States as a member of the British Empire. And so they hatched a plan, and part of that plan was to use the honor system, which we now can see was the Knights of Malta, to give titles to Americans to ingratiate themselves with American culture and American society.
So true. And when you say British honors, that usually means at this point that Queen Lizzie simply gives somebody one of these royal honors for doing her dirty work. You don't get into this secret society club, and it's not really quite a society because it's an honors, and it is basically, it is an entire nation that kowtows to this type of elitist aristocracy theft that was taken from the mainland Europe, particularly from Italy and particularly from the Vatican. So what we're seeing with the Knights, what's it called? The full British name, something like the St. John of Jerusalem Sovereign Military Order of the Knights of Malta and Hospitallers and blah, blah, blah. And what do they say they do? They teach first aid. Oh, yeah. And they supposedly are charity, though they really don't give away much money. Though they have the richest people in the world, that the British can get aligned with them. And then, of course, the the Vatican Knights of Malta have all the what is called the deposed or the black monarchy, or and the current monarchies from everywhere, and they can be any religion now. They can be your enemies. It doesn't matter, because this is an insider trading group for the big bankers and the elitists who are invited into these groups. You don't walk up and ask to join. You have to do something. Either you have to be filthy rich to get into the Knights of Malta through the Vatican. And by the way, the head of that one was the head of the Sovereign Knights, and the Vatican version of it was the Queen's relative. What was his name? He's the Commander Festing. And so for a long time, the British monarchy was directly connected, and they were fighting, as you pointed out, between the French and the British over the island of Malta. And so that's why there's now the Sovereign Order of the Knights of Malta has its own sovereign nation right outside of the walls of the Vatican City in Rome. So what is really going on there? The British looked at what was the underground banking system and really the gold network of the Templars, the shipping network of the Templars, and the military support network of the Hospitallers all became one. And later, when the Templars were deposed by King Philip the Fair, the Templars disappeared more or less. But where did they go into? They went into all of the Masonic rituals. And so you get this huge contrast between European Masonry and British Masonry. And just like you get the contrast between the Pope, the head of the Roman Catholic Church, and the monarchy of England, the head of their own Anglican Church, same thing happened with the Masonry, and particularly what's called the Illuminati, which was a group that basically became the springboard for communism. And you get to see that these secret societies were a very elite group of people. And at one point, like you have insinuated or said, that only Christians were allowed, and only certain sects of Christians were allowed. And each religion had their kind of, the Knights of Columbus for the Catholics. Or if you were a banker and you're a supporter of the Holy See, the Vatican, then you might be invited to become a member of the Knights of Malta. But the British... This is what we've been talking about. It's like the inner cabinet of the Privy Council. Those people only get those positions because they have done the dirty work of horrifying economic manipulation, pharmaceutical experimentation, vaccine genocide, and carried out the wishes of these imperialists, which we have shown so many times. It's the same story of depopulation and imperialistic hegemony, rule of the world. And you get to see this in the British so distinctly because they're so proud of what they do. And then they put out such propaganda to try to make them look as if they're just sterling. They're just beautiful.
Well, let me read to you this list of 24 steps that the Pilgrim Society had at that time, or probably earlier than this, but in 1913, a very intrepid investigative journalist by the name of Lillian Scott Troy lived in England, and she was hot on the trail to expose what she could see was going on. And somehow she got her hands on a 24-step plan to take back America that the Pilgrims were using at the time. So you can imagine if it was 1913 and they were using it, it had to have been developed much earlier than that. And I'm thinking maybe it went back to this 1880, 1890 timeframe. But their number one step was the power of the President of the United States is to be increased so as to gradually diminish the powers of Congress. And that was number one. Number two was the Supreme Court of the United States to be revised so as to, now we're talking British people writing this. Supreme Court of the United States to be revised so as to embrace only judges agreeable to the absorption of by Great Britain and uniformly hostile to the United States in the Senate. And then the precedent must be established by said court against the United States Senate in rulings, decisions, etc., specially prepared. Now, that's just four of the 20. Now, let me go down. So there we can see there is clear intent to destroy the American Republic by these groups of people, Knights of Malta, Pilgrim Society, the British monarchy. And then we've got three key points that I wanted to point out relative to the Knights of Malta. Number 10, the wives and daughters of men controlling great wealth and influence in America must be given preference at these courts. In other words, whenever they're invited to the British courts, they must be selected carefully from every state and territory in the United States. Thus, a new society, in quotes, through royal favor, must quietly and expeditiously be created. That new society, I believe, is this Knights of Malta. And then number 11, the next one, honors must be conferred on the husbands of women, thus given preference to the social circles of America, and a rank or position determined by judiciously distributed decorations. And if you look at these Knights of Malta events, that they like to dress up. It's a dress-up affair. And two more. Men whose wealth prevents their being influenced by money must have honors and position and possibly title dangled before their wives' eyes. So here we have a bunch of male chauvinists who are really appealing to the women with all of these titles and honors in order to suck them into this Anglo-American treason, essentially, because any American that would do this is engaging in treason.
I don't want royal favor. I just don't want it. I don't want to be a royalist. I don't want to be loyal to the monarchy. I'm an American, and I'm pretty sure that that the two don't.
Well, here's the problem. And so here's the key problem to this day, because you can see the current list of people that are published as members of the Knights of Malta. We're talking Chief Justice John Roberts. We're talking people we are very familiar with. And then on the British side, one really odd name that popped out is Jimmy Savile, the notorious pedophile, in addition to William F. Buckley in the U.S., and we've got many living people who are members of the Knights of Malta that we don't know about. And so here's the main problem. When the Constitution was written, there was a specific clause, and sometimes it's called the Emoluments Clause, that said that Americans were not, if you were going to be a public official, you were not to hold any title, honor, or bestowed honor from another country. And so what we have in this country right now is we have people probably all engaged in the left who are, and but that's not totally true, because we're seeing many Republicans in this list, people who have not disclosed that they have a title, the Knights of Malta title, which is a royal title officially from the Queen of England. And they're continuing to operate as public officials in this country in total violation of the Constitution. Why is that being ignored by our courts?
Yes, and why would your principal document you just mentioned, that Pilgrim Society document, which states that they are going to subvert the American Constitution and undermine us both in the executive, the legislative, and the court system, the Supreme Court system? It clearly states that is their first three intents, is to destroy our system. And basically, when it comes down to it, all this royal favor, that is about wealth, and it's about position and power, and that is to get insider trading information so that you can be like the good people in the Council on Foreign Relations or in the Highlands Forum or in QTEL or DARPA, that you know where the government's going, so you know where to put your money down on stocks. And so basically, this is a system that has been incubated and here in America by criminals who are treasonously trying to subvert American freedoms and liberty. And how do they do it? Well, they support it because with in the executive Supreme Court and legislative branches, there are senior executive service members who control them through administrative functions. And they are basically copying the British ends of court. And now in America, our court systems are completely corrupt because why? We want to make our judges into monarchs, monarchs in their own court. And this is the British system. And so getting involved in the Knights of Malta, whether it be the British or the Vatican, needs to just add the third element. The world is controlled by the Vatican, the City of London, and Washington, D.C. / New York City. So what are they trying to do here? This is through the Pilgrim Society. We have seen it again and again through social interaction, by royal favor, by the Anglo-American alliance, by the special relationship we have with the monarchy of Britain, which I don't have any relationship except I remember that the American Revolution was to get rid of them completely once and for all. We are not free of them. And the American Revolution needs to continue with this information as the lead.
Let me inject a few more of Lillian's points. She points out that one of their key objectives is to get America to engage in treaties and to ramp us up with treaties. They also recommend that the British and American navies exchange officers and that we get in wars where we're sharing our soldiers with the Brits and the Brits are sharing their soldiers with us. They're specifically calling on castigating any American who does not believe in peace and to socially ostracize them. We also see something that you said, when newspapers cannot be bought or leased, new publications must be started. Well, 1913, that was the year after J.P. Morgan had bought up all 25 of America's leading newspapers. Now, Lillian would have known that. And I think she smelled a rat and somehow she got a hold of this document. And this document disappeared from the newspaper it was published in. It was published in the San Francisco Leader. And you can't even find that newspaper now. But we've got Representative Thorkelson from Minnesota, who in 1940 republished those two articles, which are in the congressional record, and that's why we have this list. It's in the congressional record. And there are more points. And they talk about education and taking control of education. Let me read you just one here. Educators must receive special favors in flattering newspaper notices, and wide publicity must not be given to the Independence Day celebrations. People persisting in demonstrations must be cut and held up to ridicule. Any demonstrations with fireworks must be strongly opposed and discouraged on the grounds of protection to life and property.
In other words, extinguish the 4th of July, extinguish the Declaration of Independence, extinguish the Constitution, extinguish the Bill of Rights. And remember, the three controlling powers, as right there stated in the intent of the Pilgrim Society, is to make the Vatican the religious head of the world, which means that the King of Jerusalem, whoever that would be, whether it be Philip VI or Juan Carlos, or whether it would be the British monarchy, that's what they're fighting over. They would be the king of the world. And then the Brits would, of course, run through the United Nations, the world currency and the world economics. And America had always been relegated to simply be the military arm, the military branch of this new world order. Basically, right. This globalist hegemony.
Well, we see their discussion specifically of sharing naval officers. Well, if you take a look at the current contracts that Serco has with the military, the U.S. military, it's predominantly naval in nature. So we have given a British company, Serco, through their American agent, massive multi-billion-dollar contracts with our U.S. Navy. And then we see all sorts of data sharing going on between, well, we know it's going on between the Five Eyes group. So we're taking our naval information and we're passing it right to the British. And this has all been by design. So the one thing that's fascinating from an organizational viewpoint is how did this get sustained for so long? And I think that now we're seeing it. When you have the strength of the British monarchy back in the 1800s with the Prince of Wales and then Victoria supporting this, and so you've got the full resources of an empire, that at the time, the most powerful empire in the world, those full resources are applied to a new strategy to take down America. And they've developed secret societies and mechanisms and honor systems and strategies to pull this off. And they get however much money they need. What we're seeing now, and the thing we're suffering from today, I strongly believe this, is we're suffering from the end result of this level of corruption that we can see now, given the resources they had available to them, is taking this long to get where we are now. And they're very close to, in fact, achieving their objective of reincorporating America. They're not going to call it the British Empire. They're going to call it the UN. But they control these people. The Pilgrim Society controls the UN. So therefore, they're achieving it through their manipulations of the UN.
NAFTA was the UN reapportionment of North and South America. We weren't going to have a choice. Our sovereignty would have been lost when Hillary Clinton was elected. Now, let's look into the British methodology. How can this happen? Because it's been going on for so long. So let's take one teensy, tiny, little itsy-bitsy example of the way it works. The largest military contractor with the most no-bid contracts that has wasted and lost trillions of dollars is Lockheed Martin. Well, Lockheed Martin has the largest intelligence group, which has all these contractors who aren't military, and many of them are British. They come and they go. It's called L3. And so L3, for a while, had more people with top secret security clearances than we had in NSA. Okay? And what happens? Lockheed Martin, we all think, is an American company. Nope. The Queen owns the golden share, and that is how it is done. Now, that golden share is something that 9 out of 10 people would never even be able to understand if it was explained to them, but you and your researchers have pointed that out. And then what happens? Once you pointed this out, and then we did some intelligence reports stating how bad L3 was and all these contractors who all have Five Eyes clearance and complete top secret security ability to get anything in the NSA before the Americans do. As a matter of fact, I think you once said that if we wanted to know where one of our ships was, we had to ask Serco, because
that's right. They run the database.
So
they run the database.
We busted L3. Oh, well, they moved right over to their secret group SAIS. And then it folded in a year. And it
was SAIC.
SAIC. Yeah. Sorry.
Yeah.
And then it went over to Leidos. And then I think it's gone to something new. Now, so you can't even keep track of the way the British simply keep folding into different named corporations and having complete immunity because they're a corporation and because they're our special friend. We give them everything, and we literally stand back and wait for the Brits to tell us what to do when it comes to intelligence, and it's disgusting to me.
Right. So what we have also seen is that in 1946, when they formed Five Eyes, the intelligence arm of this strategy, all of the British that were involved were Pilgrims and or Knights of Malta. And so our people in the U.S. Army and the FBI who were involved in that discussion were military people at the end of the war who primarily were just waiting to get home. But those Brits, they had another idea because they knew this 24-point plan. And so they specifically focused on how to get control of the naval communication, because you got to keep in mind, in Britain being an island, the Navy is everything in their power. So when we say Navy, we think, oh, well, so what? It's a bunch of ships. No, over there, it is their primary mechanism for power. And so they knew that if they were going to continue to control this global empire, they needed to empower their Navy. And they wanted America to basically be their Navy going forward. And that's, I think, essentially what we have. And so when we look at the Purbright Institute, Douglas, and we see all that communication capability that they've got right next to the vaccine manufacturing capability, one of the things that's also becoming evident, because the other person who was involved with this group of people back in the 1880s was Henry Wellcome. And they were very knowledgeable on vaccines by that time. And this was also the decade when Nikola Tesla started putting out his inventions for wireless. And then the British then formed this fake corporation called Marconi Wireless, where they took control. The British Post Office and the Navy took control of wireless technology and started building these transmission stations all over the world. So what I think happened is, I think in the late 1800s, they began to see that viruses were more virulent when a person was subjected to wireless radiation. Now, that radiation hasn't changed. It's still the same type of effect on a human being today as it was back then. Frequency is a frequency. And so I think they knew a long time ago that they could manipulate people's health through wireless technology and viruses. And isn't it curious today that those are the two main subjects on the table right now that the New World Order is pushing, trying to shove down our throats, 5G and a mandatory vaccine. And it's becoming more and more obvious that one of their early experiments with that is what we now call the Spanish flu pandemic from 1918, which is quoted massively in all of the PR, the propaganda that we see out in the marketplace right now. And so it's very likely that wireless technology was turned way up back in the day, and this quote pandemic of the Spanish flu was in fact some sort of a radiation from wireless technology. Now, that's just my opinion, but it's looking more like that what happened. And then Wellcome was a part of that, and they somehow pushed the vaccine story on top of this as a layer. And so we don't really know what's true about most of this stuff.
Well, that's what's that's the reality of most of science right now also. Exploration, discovery, whatever you want to look, everything they discover, it seems, you know, just completely throws away all of our previous theories. So when we say Pilgrim Society, people think, oh, that's nothing, that's a dinner group. Oh, no, you need to rewrite history to be the truth that this is a conspiracy from the get-go, and that these people clearly had depopulation on their mind, whether it was from war, pharmaceuticals, irradiation. And to underscore something you just said, yes, the British controlled the world through their navy, and then we became more powerful than they did. But they had controlled the world through their British East India Company's navy before that, and they had fought with the Dutch and with the German Hanseatic League and even the French and others for what? A supremacy on the sea. And then what happened in the modern, in not currently, but in the past? Innovation came out of ships because they were completely independent. They had to have their own power source. Everything that was an invention for the wars that made our battleships into what they are. If you look closely, that's the innovation of our technology in the modern, beginning of the modern age. So they knew exactly what they were doing, that as long as they were proliferating this type of wireless, even to their ships with communication, or when they put in the landlines for telegraph or telegraphy, or when they put in the satellites, they knew that all of these would cause the human being to have to completely radically change its own physiology and to adapt. Some of us can do that, some of us can't. But as they keep adding G1, G2, G3, G4, G5, sorry, we're completely overwhelmed. It's like when they used to give us those nasty British vaccinations and inoculations from Wellcome Burroughs. They were experimenting, right? But we only got a few of them. Now, any normal child in America gets 81 of those poisonous shots. Every one of them has an enterovirus in it, which means that they have probably been fated to have illnesses later on in their life because they can't overcome the live viruses that have been put into their bloodstream. This is who we're dealing with. These pilgrims, they have a lot of different names. whether you want to call it the Frankfurt School type of propaganda manipulation, whether you want to call it Tavistock, whether you want to call it the War Propaganda Board in Britain, whether you want to call it the Empire Press Union, you want to call it the BBC, MI5, MI6, it's all the same. It goes back to a very small group of people who to this very day, and we've named them, is still attempting world genocide, depopulation as fast as they can possibly do. Through.
Oh, yes. They were writing about that in the late 1800s, early 1900s. They were very open about depopulation. And they were focused then on depopulating Africa. And, you know, that wasn't an agenda that I signed up for when I came into this world. I think our world needs to be based on love, not power and destruction.
Well, you know, they say that power will destroy you, because the more power you have, the more you have pride and hubris, and then you lust after more power. And I guess it seems to be the pattern that happens with most men, certainly. And now we see in politics some women stepping up to be that type of evil warrior who's going to go after people. But let's talk about fealty for a second, because I'd always said that the queen or the monarchy originally took their fealty to the Knights of Malta on the island of Malta, which means they took their fealty to the Pope. And now, by the way, Commander Festing has been fired, and the Pope, who is a Jesuit, put in his Jesuit replacement. And so now it's not the same as it was, and the Vatican Bank isn't the powerful source behind the Italian banks, which were the original bankers that moved into Germany and Holland that then finally went into Britain. No, what we have here is that the monarchy of Britain took fealty. They made a vow of allegiance to the Knights of Malta, which basically means they kowtowed to the Vatican Bank. And they needed to at that point, because there was a huge battle going on, and they really didn't need the battle. Britain didn't need another war. So they didn't need a war with the House of Savoy, which was the protectors through the Equestrian Order of the Holy Sepulchre. The House of Savoy to this very day is the personal protectors of the Pope and supposedly the blood lineage of Jesus, who will be someday the King of Jerusalem. So when the monarchy of Britain took a vow of fealty to the Knights of Malta, that was a really, really weird thing. And that is probably what predicated Edward VII or Prince Albert when he was a bailiff in the Maltese version of the Knights Sovereign Order of the Knights of Malta. He basically, as a bailiff, he saw, well, this is a great deal of power I have. I get to call people. I get to kick people out. I get to say who comes. I get to be the ultimate controller, practically the agenda maker for the insider trading group of all of the monarchy that controlled in the past all the wealth in the world, okay? So then even when they were deposed, some of them became black mark monarchy, as they call them, deposed monarchies, or, you know, they capitulated, whatever. Those people are still the same group. So when he saw this, he said, well, I don't want to be a bailiff. I want to be the top dog. And so he said, I'm going to create my own group. And then what did he do? The queen said, hey, make me the highest order you can. And then there's a new vow of fealty given to the British Knights of Malta. Right. And I read it closely. It clearly says that you are vowing to do whatever the order tells you to do and whatever their agenda is, and all of the officers thereof, which makes the queen the head officer. That means you take a vow of fealty to the queen. And if you're an American citizen, that's illegal.
It is. It's unconstitutional. So what we need to see immediately with all of our public officials is they all need to tell us, are you a member of the Knights of Malta? And when did you become a member? Or are you a member of the Pilgrim Society? And when you became a member of the Pilgrim Society? Every American citizen needs to know that, because these are material, influential relationships that these people are holding, and they're keeping those secrets from us. And so at minimum, they need to tell us. They need to resign. And if they're not going to resign and tell us, then they need to be prosecuted.
John Roberts, the supposed head of our Supreme Court, who is nothing more than Obama's step and fetch it boy, as well as other Supreme Court justices, have personally traveled to the island of Malta, to the University of Malta, which is about as big as my community college over here, to give the only lectures he gave in that entire year to a small class of people who didn't even understand English on the island of Malta. But I'll tell you what he brought back. He brought back either bearer bonds or his offshore account increase in his wealth for being paid. You know, John Roberts is being paid to make these horrible decisions. And his alignment with the Knights of Malta so obviously through these kind of overt actions. Again, I keep saying it disgusts me. There has to be another word for this, but it's illegal. I want these people to meet the justice for the crimes that they've committed.
That needs to happen immediately. There's not even a question here. Some of these people, we know that they're Knights of Malta. So therefore, they need to get off, including the, by the way, one of them that just popped out, the Inspector General of the Department of Defense is Knights of Malta. That is just unbelievable.
In other words, he closes his eyes for every SES deal with Britain, which has been a no-bid contract, probably as long as history can remember.
Now we know how Serco and Kinetic get all their contracts. It's all an insider's game. This is fascism writ large.
If you follow the path of those who are invited to the Council on Foreign Relations, and then if they kowtow, then they might become a member of the Council on Foreign Relations. And then they might be invited to some of these seminars in Britain and be paid thousands of dollars to do nothing but just show up and then be given positions where they actually don't have to go to work in a British organization like we got to see with Papadopoulos. And then you get to see the real people like Joseph Mifsud. These are the people that we're talking about in the intelligence groups that simply lead you to kowtow. Well, you might get a Rhodes Scholarship, of course, or you might get a Wellcome Trust Scholarship, or you might get one of these other scholarships that make sure that you have to go to Britain, you have to go to Oxford and Cambridge so that you can get programmed before you come back to America. And then if you're very, very lucky and you get into politics and you get a good position or you're in a high military position, they might invite you to join the CFR, Council on Foreign Relations, and then, you might get invited to a Pilgrim Society dinner. And then you'll get to see a room full of the power players. And then if you are still one of those people that they can manipulate, that you think this is all a good thing, and that you're not so stupid that you actually believe the propaganda that you've seen through it, and that you want to really be a pilgrim and you want to kill lots of people and depopulate the world and be like a Bill Gates who's just thrilled to be a pilgrim and thrilled to be running around saying, I'm proud, I got the needle, I'm going to stab your child and kill him. This, and 5G, got to have 5G, 6G, 7G, I don't care, as many Gs as there are. These kind of people, they have only
one. That's what we're talking about.
And that intent is evil.